Welcome to another episode of Lions Collective on another Wednesday, this time recapping a Detroit Lions loss along with a bunch of other storylines that came from Sunday night's loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. I am your host, Jeff Iafredi, joined by the founder of Detroit Football Network, Justin Rogers. We got Colton Pouncey from The Athletic and 97.1 The Ticket Zone, Will Birchfield, chilling with us as well. If you're watching, hit the like button on the stream. Make sure you are subscribed. We're live every single Wednesday at 6 p.m., sometimes Thursdays. All right? There's some busy fellas here on the show. They got stuff to do. But we appreciate you all. Fellas, there's a lot to get into. Obviously, the Brian Branch suspension, the loss itself. We'll talk about some of the injuries, guys potentially returning this week or after the bye week. And then we'll get into the Bucs game as well. But how are you fellas doing now, a couple days removed from this loss?
I think I've almost recovered on the sleep. Almost.
Yeah.
I did not have a great weekend. Mizzou lost, and I got to see that in person. So that was rough. But other than that, I'm doing fine.
This feels like the loss that won't die. It's Wednesday, and we're still dissecting this thing.
Yeah, I credit your station, Will, for starting this thing back up. Getting this,
I'll take full blame for that.
Yeah, which we will we'll talk about it all. But I guess we'll start with probably the biggest storyline. Well, I guess that is one of them. But the other, Brian Branch, not going to be available for Monday night's football game against the Buccaneers after the game. You know, exchanged. Well, I guess it was one-sided exchange with Juju Smith-Schuster. And, you know, Dan Campbell spoke about it after the game and he apologized to Andy Reid and the Kansas City Chiefs. Brian Branch felt obviously terrible after the game as well. And he obviously regrets it. But what did you guys kind of make and what was some of your takeaways? You guys obviously get to see Brian Branch more than any other fans do. So you know more about the character of Brian Branch. But what was kind of your reaction to that whole situation and now the suspension? I know he's appealing. I don't know if they've came out with an official ruling on it, but we will see on that.
I think it's funny, and Dan Campbell kind of alluded to it in his commentary on Branch on, what is it, Tuesday? All the week's all shuffled, but Tuesday, just talking about the type of person, the type of character Branch is. We see it in the locker room. You know, we see it when we interact with him. You know, he's one of those rare players that addresses everybody as sir and ma'am. It's mm-hmm. uncomfortable to a degree. He's really soft-spoken. He's exceedingly polite. It is strange to marry that with the issues he's experienced kind of on the field with some of these emotional outbursts. And I think fans have gotten maybe a little carried away with it. I've got several messages this week. One going as far as say the Lions need to cut him. He's causing problems. Many other. Yeah. Great. It wasn't Will, I promise. you know, several others suggesting he needs anger management immediately. Like, this is an emotional game. And, you know, I want to factor in the fact that he was injured going into this one, probably a little sensitive to those injuries, takes a shot late in the game and blood is boiling. A lot of these guys in the locker room are here because they don't take losing particularly well. And I'm not justifying the action. It was wrong. He's getting a suspension that he probably deserves. But I don't think it's reflective wholly of Brian Branch, the person.
Yeah. I wrote a column about just the whole situation with Brian Branch this week. And this is probably my third show talking about it. So hopefully we're wrapping up here soon, but I get why we need to, just because he's too important to the Lions to kind of keep involving himself in these situations. And, you know, you can point to a few different incidents, two of them previously against the Packers. So at first I was like, is it just a Packers thing with him that sets him off? But, you know, obviously Juju got to him after this game. My thing with Brian is Justin kind of hit on it, is he is a completely different person off the field, in the locker room, around the facility than he is on the field. And in some ways you have to respect that, because, you know, some guys just are wired differently. When they get on the field, they're a dog. And Brian Branch is the definition of a dog on the field. But there have been a couple incidents where it's a little bit concerning. Even going back to training camp, where I think it was like the third day of practice and he's in shorts and he's like lowering his shoulder and like laying hits on dudes like Tim Patrick probably
Tim
ran
Patrick
out of town.
Still not pleased about that.
Tim Patrick is still mad about that in Jacksonville right now. Just hitting in shorts without pads. And like, I think Maurice Norris got a lot of the flack for that, but Brian Branch was doing a lot of the same things that day in practice. And you're just like, hey, you know, it's practice, right? It was some of the, some you watch that and you're just like, all right, this guy's a little different, but you know, as long as it doesn't hurt them on the field, you can live with it. But I get myself into a situation like this where he let his emotions get the best of him, and it was against a player, Juju Smith-Schuster, who is known to stir the pot, get in people's heads. I don't know if you saw Zaire Franklin with the Colts went on a podcast, I think Jeff Teague's podcast, and said that Juju needs to get his ass whooped. He needed that. Brian France was doing the Lord's work is what he said. So you see a lot of that after this game. So like, I think players are probably siding with Brian and to some extent there, but for the team, the Lions aren't going to have him for this game. And Dan Campbell said he doesn't expect him to sort of win that appeal. So they're proceeding as he's not going to be available this week. And it's a pretty good Bucks team. So that hurts you to an extent. And what I hate the most for Brian is that he is too good of a player to have this reputation. I hate that he has this reputation because we should be talking about how good he is on this field. When we were watching him in training camp, we're like, man, this dude is the best defensive player on the field. And that's including Hutch in some of those practices. Like if you told me Brian Branch would be top 10 in defensive player of the year voting, I'd be like, yeah, he's probably deserves that. He's so versatile. He can cover like a corner. He hits like a linebacker. He is instinctive as hell. When you watch him on the field, you realize he is truly one of the best players at his position. And it's getting to a point now where an incident like this on nationally televised game against the Chiefs, a lot of people are watching this. If that's a lasting memory for you as a player, instead of what you did on the field and how good you are, that's going to follow you. And, you know, he's been one of the most penalized players in the league since he entered the league, one of the most fined. You know, he's had some of these hits that are a little questionable, and now he's suspended for a game. And that stuff starts to follow you around the longer you do it. So I really think the Lions need to have a conversation with him, whether it's a coach or a player. You know, DJ Reader told me after the game that, yeah, we're gonna talk to him. And you know, a lot of people probably want to talk to him after a game like this, but we'll give him some space and we'll have a conversation just to let him know, like, not only is it affecting us, but it's affecting you, man. Like, you're hurting your own pockets with some of these fines and whatnot, and you don't want that reputation on you. So I was a little bit critical of him this week, but it's only because I know who he is as a person off the field, and that's not really who he is. And I don't want this reputation to follow him around because, quite frankly, he's too good of a person to kind of have that reputation.
Yeah, he's not going to have to pay this fine, though. This $76,000 fine is going to be covered by every other player who has played against Juju Smith-Schuster. They're all going to pool their resources and cover that fine on Branch's behalf because he took out Juju on their behalf. No, in all seriousness, and I'll echo you, Colton, I feel like I've made this point in four or five different spaces now this week. So I'm sorry if you've heard me say a version of these words before, but when we first went on the air on Sunday night, just as that game had ended, I warned anyone who was listening or watching, this is probably going to result in a suspension for Branch. And I'll say again what I said there, like in a vacuum, Brian Branch's swipe at Juju's face mask probably isn't worthy of a suspension. And that's true based on some of the other clips that are going around social media of, say, the Chargers alignment taking a similar swipe at Kelsey earlier this year and facing no suspension. But these things aren't judged in vacuum. They're judged in context. And the context here is pretty layered. And it starts with Branch being a repeat offender and that he has been fined 13 times through his first, you know, two seasons and change and has already been fined three times this year. And so you're viewed differently by the league when you continue to have incidents like this. I think the second layer of context, like it or not, is the fact that this game was on national TV with a huge audience watching and the NFL probably feeling the need to bring down a firmer sentence or a firmer statement on Branch based on his past and based on the fact they don't want this to be viewed as acceptable behavior in the NFL. And maybe the third smaller piece of context is that, you know, Juju walks off the field with a bloodied nose. Like Branch did significant damage with the swipe that he took at a player that fans know well. And so you add those three pieces of context together and you get a one-game suspension. And this is kind of the reality that Branch has created for himself. You know, things that the league might otherwise dismiss entirely, and I think we've already seen this happen to Branch this year, result in fines. And incidents that otherwise might result in fines can lead to suspensions. And I think that's kind of the crossroads or the intersection that Branch has reached now in, you know, two seasons and six games of his career. And it is his own doing, and it is unfortunate because he's probably one of the 50 best players in the NFL. He might be one of the 25 to 30 best defensive players, but he's becoming known less for that and more for these emotional outbursts. And it's a shame, and it's really inopportune timing for a team that's already obviously banged up in the secondary, that's not going to have both of its starting corners, that also has a star safety nursing a knee injury, against an offense that is playing as well as any in the league, a quarterback that is playing as well as any in the league, coming in here on Monday night. So, yeah, the time for Branch to make some adjustments, to look inward, I guess, is now. And I think what Dan Campbell said today on these airwaves resonated with me. One, he said Branch is not a thug. Like, he clearly wanted to get that message out. This is not a reflection of Brian Branch, the person. He also said he's got a really big heart. And sometimes he cares, and these are my words now, sometimes he cares so deeply that he winds up making really rash and emotional decisions, and they're beginning to cost not only him but his team. So I agree. Someone or multiple people within the building need to sit him down and not just have a conversation, but make sure that he receives it, because this is a conversation they've had with him before. Like, Dan was very clear about warning Branch ahead of this year's opener at Lambeau, where he obviously had the double bird incident last year after being ejected. Like, do not let the heat of the moment get the best of you. And on like the third play of the game, there's Brian Branch getting entangled with Tucker Kraft, ripping his helmet off and costing his team 15 yards and then facing a fine later. So it needs to be more than said. It needs to be internalized by Branch. And the last thing I'll say on this is that the public rebuke that Dan offered Branch at the post-game podium on Sunday night, I can assure you, pales in comparison to the tongue lashing that I am sure Campbell gave him behind closed doors. That coaching staff, I think, is growing a little bit tired of having to answer for Branch's transgressions. As much as they love him, as much as we all admire him and his talent, I think they're reaching a point of frustration with needing to answer for where he errs. And so, yeah, the time is now for Branch to make a change in the way he comports himself, both during play and after the whistle.
Hey, Will, I want to go back to the, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, the point about the Chargers player slapping Kelsey. So that occurred during the game. And I think, holy, if Branch reacted the way he did immediately after that block, what we'd be talking about is a 15-yard penalty and a fine. It is because it happened after the game. And when you hear jeopardizing player safety, they're not talking about Juju's nose bleeding. They're talking about the sideline reporters, the six-year-old assistant coaches, the chaos of all the people that are on the field, the police officers, as this kind of breaks into a mini melee. And obviously it got under control within, you know, 60 seconds, but that is the safety element of this that the league, I think, came down hard on. Was, you know, you put a lot of people in jeopardy by your actions, you know, and you didn't do it within the confines of the white line. And so that's the biggest issue. It's really amusing to me, though, because, like, I wrote a column on Branch last year as the fines were mounting, and I compared it to, I believe it was Derwin James with the Chargers, who's another just phenomenal safety, but, you know, he racked up too many penalized hits, fined hits, that they suspended him. And I said, if Branch can't get his act together, this is where it's heading, right? And it's really, really hard to play safety in the NFL right now. The protections that receivers have across the middle, valid, you know, you want to protect the safety of these guys, but it puts safeties in a really, really difficult position. Branch's tackling in those situations has not always followed the rules. He's drawn the flags. He's drawn the fights. They bought a special pad for him to work in practice so that he would learn to properly hit guys. But he's knocked himself out in that Arizona game last year because he lowers his head. And so, you know, I never would have thought this would have been what drew him the suspension. I figured it was going to be blowing up some receiver across the middle and that guy being, you know, carted off with some injury, concussion or whatnot. But, you know, there are adjustments to make, and he's a second year player. He's a young player. Of course, there are adjustments to make. And, you know, a third year player. Thank you. You know, I fully believe that, you know, these adjustments will be made accordingly, working with, you know, the veteran teammates and the coaching staff.
I almost feel like Branch thought he was doing the right thing by taking it after the game?
Preach. Like, preach.
Probably.
I just had this conversation.
After what happened in Green Bay where he throws the helmet and Tucker Kraft and that's a whole thing, he's probably like, all right, well, I don't want to cost my team a flag. Let me air my grievances after this game. And if you watch there's a fan video, there's like the all 22. If you watch the high angle of that clip, he is taking a beeline. He's ignoring Pat Mahomes. He's going right to Juju. Like, all right, clock zero. I'm good now. Like, that's what it looked like to me. That was premeditated. And so I almost feel like he thought he was doing the right thing, but in the end, it ends up costing him a full game and a game check to go along with it. So he almost played himself.
Took it outside the club.
I can imagine him swiping Juju and then looking back at Dan saying, see, coach, I learned. I listened. Are you proud?
You know,
not 15 yards.
Yeah. So I don't know. I have thoughts on Juju. I thought the block in the back that wasn't called was BS. It was
certainly the time of the game too. I mean, come on.
It was extremely unnecessary. And I don't know if they were just jawing off like all game. And that was kind of a boiling point. And Juju's like, all right, here's my shot to get one at him. But you can't retaliate. The second guy always gets caught, whether it's in the moment or as we see now after the game. So Branch just has to be smarter. And look, man, I know it's tough. Like, these guys are competitors. You don't want to get sunned out there on the field. You don't want to get punked. That's what a few guys, I think Terrion even said that on his podcast this week. Just like, hey, BB would give you the shirt off his back, but he's not going to back down from a challenge. So I certainly understand that side of it. These guys are competitors. They're athletes. They're, you know, if you played sports, you know what this is about. But at the same time, I just look at where he is on this team. He's too important to be missing games. And especially where the Lions are right now with how thin they are in the secondary, to plan that out at the end of a game, when you know the situation, you know what's probably going to happen after the fact, like, just not the smartest thing. And I'm sure he'll learn from this and he'll grow from it and he'll be better for it. Hopefully it's a wake-up call for him.
I think it's funny that you think we're going to be done talking about this, then it's Saturday when those 4 p.m. fines hit. We're all going to be looking. Yeah. Is Juju fined? Is Pat Mahomes fined for taunting Brian Branch to his face? I mean, it's going to be resurfaced one more time this week at least, gentlemen.
Yeah.
The other reality that Branch has created for himself is that he's also now a target for opposing teams. If you've displayed an unwilling or an inability to control your emotions when you're provoked, teams are going to try and get under your skin over the course of the game. So he's going to have to be aware of that now moving forward. I think that's really important for him to understand. I think we should acknowledge, and Branch's defense, and maybe you guys can jump in on this too. If the official after the block in the back throws that flag and acknowledges that penalty, is there a chance that we avoid the post-game altercation entirely?
Yes,
maybe. I think so. Probably.
You know, and so there is some accountability maybe to be laid at the feet of the officials for missing what seemed like a pretty clear and illegal block in the back, but it doesn't excuse at the same time how Branch reacted what was probably 20 minutes later in real time.
Yeah, well, you mentioned, Will, that Dan Campbell had to answer to Brian Branch's actions. He also had to answer to many people wondering about what happened on that first drive. The Jared Goff, absolute. I mean, it was amazing how he was able to keep the football.
It wasn't a good catch. It was a terrible catch for the record.
The way he was able to juggle it, and then he pushed through. I think people are probably going to look at that moment, hindsight, Monday morning quarterback, and say, well, you should have just handed it to DeMont. But I got to defend Johnny Moe. Like, if that is executed properly, every single fan would have erupted. Like, that was an excellent play call at the time. Obviously, they knew they were saving that one. They just executed it poorly. And Dan Campbell spoke about that. Obviously, with Jared Goff being under center, it was declared a quarterback. He had to stop. He was in motion. The technicalities, all that stuff kind of came out. But the interesting thing that happened today is Dan spoke on how the head referee, Craig Rolstead, told him that they did not, or the call came from New York, essentially. Yeah. But please chime in if there's anything.
Yeah, just to clarify, he didn't say that it was Craig Rolstead. And that actually matters here in this conversation. So as I have been informed, like, there's an official on each sideline during the games whose job, among other duties, is to serve as like the main point of contact for each head coach to relay decisions that are made on the field to the head coach on either sideline in moments of confusion. And when the decision was made to overturn that call, while Rolstad did confer with Campbell about the mechanics of why the play was overturned, why it was a legal motion, he wasn't the one that explained how they reached that decision. As I understand, it was the sideline judge who communicated to Campbell that the call came down from upstairs. And as you guys know, in the NFL, and especially in that situation, upstairs is a pretty loaded word. It could literally mean upstairs in the stadium from the replay assistant in the booth in Kansas City, or it could mean, like, more colloquially, up the NFL ladder from the league's officiating arm and the replay review office in New York. And I understand that kind of in this loud, hectic, emotional environment, when Campbell heard the call came from upstairs, he may have interpreted that to mean New York, when the sideline judge may have simply been referring to the replay booth on site in Kansas City. That being said, I still don't think it excuses or explains how the league still appeared to violate its own protocols in that review process, because J. Roger Colton, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure whether that call came down from New York or on site in Kansas City, it wasn't subject to replay review. And so the league still would have had to overstep its self-imposed boundaries. And it also doesn't excuse or explain the fact that Rolstad said after the game, the officials, quote, did not have any assistance from Kansas City or New York. The only possibility here in my mind is that the sideline official who communicated with Campbell was entirely uninformed or misinformed when he said the call came down from upstairs. But either way, the league has egg on its face here, again, surrounding another controversial overturned call that has gone against the Lions. So I fully understand the fan outrage and fan angst surrounding this, but I do think it's worth noting that it wasn't Rolstad who said the call came from upstairs, and I don't think anyone said verbatim the call came from New York. I think there might be a misinterpretation in how Campbell received what he was told by the sideline judge.
Will, this is really good information. It's filling in a blank that I didn't have and was assuming all along. And we know pretty well, like, Dan Campbell doesn't lie. You know, it's just not something he does.
He's incapable.
it's pretty difficult for him. He'll talk around something if he doesn't want to answer. And so I didn't doubt that he heard what he thought he heard. And I had long assumed that it was a member of the officiating staff, as you explained it, the one we frequently see talking to coaches on the sideline, conveying something where maybe he didn't fully grasp. And so he had bad information, relayed bad information to Dan, which has now been relayed to the public. I will tell you that I was heavily involved in the pool report. I specifically sought out the Kansas City reporter and asked for clarity on whether that was either phoned in from either the replay assistant in Kansas City or New York. That question was asked specifically the both. Was it the assistant on site? Was it New York? And Rolstad very clearly said neither. So replay assistant was not used in this. And the reason I thought Rolstad actually was very thorough with his explanation of the mechanics of it. And so what he said is, there are two points where Goff could have got legal. It was both at the center point and at the end of the motion. But within that, the responsibility of checking those two different points switch from Rolstad at the initial point to the side judge, or I can't remember exactly which official, but the one near the sideline. And so the reason the conference was required is because Rolstad took his eyes off Goff. He wasn't no longer responsible to see. So he had to say, hey, he didn't do what he was supposed to do here. Did he do what he was supposed to do at the other end of it? And that's why there was this delay, this conference to work it out. But, you know, it's not going to be a popular opinion, but this is what we want in sports. We want them to get it right. And obviously this one negatively affected the Lions. It affected them in a way that looked bad, that's had lingering controversy. but the call itself was right. And on top of that, it had zero impact in the game. Zero. They lost by a bigger margin. They had plenty of opportunities to win this game with execution errors. This was a more than an officiating error. It was a coaching error. They didn't coach it correctly, and the players didn't know it because they did what they were told. And so I think we're focusing on the wrong thing here. I know it's really in vogue to blame the officials and Detroit versus everybody and all that, but like, it's victim mentality. It's loser mentality. Take accountability that you screwed up the play, which Dan Campbell has, and move on. Like, win the game anyway, as Amon-Ra St. Brown said. We're not going to blame the officials. We blew that game. They're right. They did, and move on to the next one. Tampa Bay on deck.
Yeah, I agree with both sides, man. I get it. I guess I understand some of the fan frustration. Like, it's not a great look. It happened in Kansas City against that team that gets the favorable calls more often than not. And I think there are other situations in that game that you could probably be more upset with, just based on, did they get the rule right in the end? Yes or no? Like, if the officials got it right, which is Jared was like, it was an illegal motion, as we know, then yeah, it's a penalty and you just deal with it and you move on. They kick the field goal. I think, you know, based on where the game was, obviously first drive of the game, it's like, if you go down and score a touchdown and you do it the way they did it, which was what, 14, 15 plays, almost 10 minutes off the clock, and you punch that in, you're feeling really good about where you are. Even if it's just the first drive, I think you kind of set the tone for the game. Coming away with 3 points, it's still a good drive, but it feels a little flat. So if you were able to get that touchdown, I think you'd feel a little different about that start. But in the end, you still lost by 13 points. So it's like, it's not just an apples to apples comparison. Like, oh, if we had done this, we would have won the game, right? There are other situations that impacted this one. One of them being that Travis Kelce catch where it didn't look like it was a catch. And I'm like, why wasn't there any like assistance to come down and say, hey, that actually wasn't a catch? But the Chiefs rushed up to the line, snapped the ball. Lions only have 9 players off the field, on the field. They get flagged for offside somehow still with only 9 players. Very funny. Mahomes gets 11 yards. And all of a sudden, that's like 24 yards in a span of like 20 seconds that kind of hurt you. But there are a lot of plays, and I don't know if anyone wants to hear, there's a lot of plays in that game where the Lions just didn't make. You know, there's a 4th-and-2 pass to St. Brown that he dropped, which he normally catches 99 out of 100 times, and that just happened to be the one time he dropped it. But in terms of this situation, you know, obviously it would have been nice to start the game with the touchdown, but the Lions still had, you know, about, 50-ish minutes left in the game to kind of do something after that and get back into it. And that was with a 3-point lead to start. So I get nobody likes it because it's the Chiefs and whatnot. And there were some other questionable calls in that game for sure. Like, I'm not going to say there wasn't. But I also don't love blaming everything on the officials or officiating when you still have a bunch of time left to kind of dig yourself out of a hole. So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
And Jeff hit the point right away. Just hand the damn ball to Demo. Just hand the ball. Like, I mean, I like the play. It's fun, but like, run that on 2nd and goal from the 3. Like, that's the time where if you screw it up, you got time to fix it. 4th and 1 from the 3/4 yard line. Run the damn ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to echo that. And this honestly goes back to the controversy that unfolded in Dallas, whether or not the NFL or the officials were right in that case. When you run trick plays that push the limit of what is permitted by the rule book, you are relying on the referees to interpret those rules and to see that play exactly as you interpret it and exactly as you see it. And you're putting it in their hands. And the one thing that coaches always say and players always say is don't put it in the hands of the officials. And I'm not saying the Lions should dump out the trick play playbook and only run it right up the gut on 4th and 1 from here on out. But it is a reminder that if you can keep control of the game on your own terms, sometimes it's worth doing that. And for anyone that wants some accountability or vengeance against these officials, I would just say, take note of what games that crew gets moving forward. Like the NFL, while they may not publicly come down against them, will probably, if I'm on the right track here, demote them a little bit in rank. Like, I don't think you'll see that officiating crew get many, if any, more marquee games this season. They might be looking at, like, you know, Browns, Titans moving forward. So maybe that's one way, one way in which they have to answer for the sloppy situation that they created on Sunday night.
You bro, sick. I looked it up as he was saying it, and it's Patriots Titans this week.
Guy,
that's <enough. laughs> hilarious.
Wow, sounds like purgatory. I mean, that sounds terrible. Yeah. Now, I do want to get your guys' thoughts on what Dan spoke about today. He did. He was on Jim Costa, John Jansen's show, spoke about Alim McNeil and how he is expected to play much higher percentage. We're talking 99.999 probably at this point he's going to play, barring any setbacks. So the Lions should be getting Alim McNeil on Monday night. Give him, you know, 20, 30 snaps, whatever the number is, before the bye week. He talked about how in November, December, the team's going to look a lot different. They're getting healthier. And to be honest, we haven't mentioned the new free agent signing, Kendall Fuller, yet. We haven't talked about him. So I guess we can kind of parlay that all together. But looking at this upcoming Monday night game, what kind of impact will Alim McNeil have to this defense that already has been, I think, for the most part, pretty solid despite the injuries? But what kind of impact are you guys looking to get out of Alim McNeil coming off that ACL injury?
A huge impact. I mean, he's one of the most complete defensive tackles in football. You know, Dan Campbell said, and a couple of coaches have actually joked this, that he's already, you know, already kind of given it to the offensive lineman out there in practice. He's been a problem out there wrecking plays. We haven't seen a ton of it yet, obviously, just because we don't are close practices and whatnot. But I am expecting big things from Alim McNeil. He is a do-it-all defensive tackle. There are guys in this league that can rush the passer only from that position. There are guys in this league that can mainly stop the run, but he's versatile enough to do both at a very high level, and that's why the Lions paid him as such. So really, I think the first couple of weeks is just getting his feet wet, getting used to practice speed, and then working yourself into game speed, which you're really not going to be ready for until you're out there and you know you're huffing and puffing. But they've tried to prepare him as best as they can in the meantime, and being careful with him, being smart with him. Obviously, Justin, he talked to you a couple of weeks ago and said he's basically ready to go back then. I think they've been smart with him, being careful. So if this is a week, which it sounds like it's going to be, I can't wait to see him. He's just a fun player to watch, man. He's so underrated. I know, you know, defensive tackles don't get a lot of love in this league, but he is truly, in my opinion, one of the best young talents at his position, and a guy that just works so hard. He's such a tireless worker. He spent most of his offseason when he wasn't rehabbing at the facility, and in years past when he's worked to transform his body, he's been living in Detroit, just being at the facility every day in the weight room, getting his body right, eating better, doing all the right things to become a high level NFL defensive tackle, get himself paid, which he has been since then. And I think we're going to see a huge impact with him running stunts with DJ Reed and Hutch and those guys. And this defensive line, which I think has played pretty well so far, is about to get even better.
I'm kind of processing the numbers right now, but they've really leaned on a three-man rotation with DJ Reader, Tyreek Williams, and Roy Lopez. And obviously some of the ends are rotating in there, but I've talked about this before. Like, that's essentially three nose tackles, right? Like, I know some athleticism to their nose tackles, but they're nose tackles, right? And so you've lacked a traditional three technique all season long. And DJ Reader has played really well, but he's playing 60-61% of snaps at 330 pounds at over 30 years of age. And I know he's done this throughout his career, but like, the man's getting up there. Like, he could use a little bit of that workload taken off of his shoulders that he's kind of had to carry here. And so, you know, you get Alim in there, McNeil in there, to reduce some of that off of Reader, to maybe distill down and allow Tyreek Williams to concentrate a little bit more on what he's really good at, instead of having maybe this too broad playbook or assignments for a first-year player, where maybe he's had some mental lapses that maybe don't get as noticed as if you're a cornerback or an offensive tackle on an island, but are unquestionably there when you look back at the film. And it just solidifies the core of the defensive line. And it's going to help out Aiden Hutchinson more than anything, because now you've got a defensive tackle that can penetrate into the pocket, can force a quarterback to bail. And when he bails, who eats? It's Aiden. And so, you know, it's it's just a very welcomed addition. I don't think they would have been so urgent about it had Levi Onwuzurike not got hurt as well. He could have filled in that gap as that penetrating one gap, three technique offense or defensive tackle, but like they just haven't had that guy. And so, you know, it's going to be a really, really welcome boost.
Yeah. And that works both ways. J-Raj, like if the defensive ends are setting edges and that quarterback has to bail up the middle, well, you're going to bail directly into the open arms and the big old gut now of a Lee McNeil or DJ Reader or Tyreek Williams. So you can see the vision for that defensive line coming to life. And, you know, DJ Reader has taken on a huge amount of double teams this season, and these numbers can be somewhat unreliable at times, but I saw just a couple of weeks ago that he had faced as many double teams on the interior as almost any other defensive tackle in the NFL this season. And certainly Aleem's return will alleviate some of that load and will ideally get both Tyreek and DJ Reader. I always confuse those two.
DJ Reader.
Yeah. I know, it's brutal. I feel like I coach myself every single time. Yeah. Get those guys some more one-on-ones, and we should see even more results from those two. Man, you look at the way Aleem was trending back in 2023, and then the way he was playing for the duration of last season. He really was establishing himself as one of the 5, 6, 7 most disruptive defensive tackles in the NFL. Like, he was right there production wise against the run and the pass, as you know, your Dexter Lawrence's, your you know, even your Chris Jones at the time, your Jeffrey Simmons. Like, he was 100% entering that conversation. So he might not be there right off the jump. And when I asked Dan last week if Aleem was going to play against the Chiefs, how many snaps he would have played, he said about 20 to 25. We can probably guess 25 to 30 is a good starting point on Sunday, but it won't take him long to get going, man. Campbell said this morning, he was like, yeah, look, he'll have to shake off some cobwebs, but it's not going to take long based on these last 2 weeks. And Aleem is raring to go. And, you know, during his rehab, he focused not only on re-strengthening his knee and getting himself stable again, but kind of rebuilding his body for what feels like a second or third time in the NFL. His goal was to come back even stronger, even more explosive. And after that first time we spoke with him after his first practice a couple weeks ago, I asked him, just kind of walking back into the locker room, like if he was able to feel that added strength that he referenced in his chest, in his back, in his arms. And he was like, look, it was only one practice. We didn't have pads on. I only got so much work. But then he kind of mimed a long arm move and was like, but yeah, everything feels different. So, you know, like don't expect a game wrecking Nobel Peace Prize worthy performance in the season debut. But I think as the season goes on, and especially on the backside of the bye, you're going to see Aleem remind everyone that he really is a star in this league.
Dude, he looks pretty cut. I mean, just watching him walk around the locker room, he looks like he's in great shape. So must have been hitting the weight room hard in between those Reba episodes.
Dude, he said, if I didn't look this good with how hard I've been working, like something would be wrong. Like, he's been absolutely grinding for months, and he's been at his playing weight for months. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I before we get into more, I do have to tell you about our friends over at Sleeper Fantasy. But before I do that, let's hear from a word from our sponsors here.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
All right, let me get this situated. All right, look at that. First try, no problem. You guys know the code, HMA. Get a $100 deposit matched up to $100. It's Sleeper Fantasy. It's one of the fastest growing fantasy platforms in the entire world with over 6 million users in continuously growing. They still earn some of the highest levels of engagement per user in the industry because at Sleeper, it's not just about sports. It's about building personal connections and lasting memories. They also have Sleeper Picks, which is the real money product that connects friends over picks, especially for this Monday night game, Lions Bucks. You just choose 2 to 8 of your favorite players from pregame, live, or you can do different sports. Pick more or less than the predicted stats on Sleeper. You can get up to 1,000x payout. Share with your friends and get rewarded together. Use the code HMA. Get a $100 deposit. Match up to $100. Shout out to Sleeper for sponsoring the fellas as always. But I did want to bring up your guys' thoughts. I know people are probably going to wonder because I spoke about this yesterday, and fans, I think, were pretty fired up about it. Brad Holmes made a move. It wasn't a practice squad move. All right. I think people are usually expecting that, you know, like a Trey Flowers, someone that's kind of just on the street, all due respect, that, you know, is just here as a body. I think Kendall Fuller is someone that has a ton of experience. I made a Twitter post or an X post the other day. He had a very, very good 2023 season. He was, I think, 13th highest graded corner on PFF in terms of coverage. He was a top 10 corner on PFF overall with the Dolphins last year, a little up and down, didn't finish the season. But I think we can say Kendall's a pro. He's started over 100 times in his career. What kind of player are you guys expecting and kind of how he will help this team in a Monday night matchup, which is against the best team in the NFC right now, the Buccaneers?
I think what I'm more interested in is how do the Lions view this addition in relation to their safety position? And, you know, my first reaction was, oh, shit, they're going to play Rock, or they're expecting Rock to play safety in this game. And I don't know if it's as a replacement for Kirby Joseph because they're going to arrest him, or Rock's going to be your number three safety. I don't know that at this point. We're too early in the week where we haven't seen kind of the practice routines and got a feel for that yet. But, you know, if Fuller is active, it's a lot easier to plug and play outside cornerback. It's a physical position far more than a mental position. The safety position is far more mental, particularly in Detroit's scheme where they have a ton of checks and adjustments and hand signals, and Rock rep there all training camp and a couple of the preseason games. And so, you know, you don't bring in a safety midweek and expect him to pick up all the communication aspects of it. You can bring in a cornerback and just say, get out there. They did it last week with Arthur Millett. We've seen it in the past. And so to me, Fuller, good player, great addition. Really nice plug and play option, but I'm super interested in how this, what I assume means for Rock this week.
Yeah, I wonder what it means for the style of coverage they want their corners to play. Because when he's been at his best, he's been a zone cover corner. I think that's sort of probably where he feels most comfortable. And I was looking up the numbers just a little bit. The last two games in particular, the Lions have played 72.5%. Zone, which is up from about 60.4% from weeks 1 to 4. So I don't know how much of that is opponent related versus, hey, we don't have our full collection of our shut down man cover corners, the guys that we trust to play in that situation. Maybe let's play a little bit off the ball and try to make something happen. So to me, bringing a guy like Fuller kind of speaks to maybe they want to play more zone, and he's a guy that's really comfortable playing zone versus man. So that's kind of where my mind goes, but I do think it's a good addition just to have a veteran that's played a lot of football in this league. I think he dealt with some concussion issues last year. So if he's, you know, well past that and feeling good, you know, I'm excited to see what he can do out there and when they call him up.
Yeah. He played a ton of man coverage reps back in 2023, the season that Jeff was referencing. I think when I just looked, it was the ninth or eighth most in the league that year, which would seem to be a corner who is suited to play in this defense. But to your point, Colton, like, he was much more reliable and productive in zone coverage. The numbers against him in man are actually pretty glaring. Like, he was kind of torched in man coverage that year that he played so much of it. And I think most of his high PFF grade that year owed to, like, really solid tackling and really stout work in the run game, which also outlines a corner who is suited to play in this defense. These things are yeah, I mean, they're non-negotiable. So you could see how they'd be comfortable plugging and playing him, especially if they have to go, you know, to more zone in the games ahead. But some ball production too, which stands out. I mean, this defense has placed, and this coaching staff, such an emphasis on takeaways. And you look at his track record, and he certainly had some interceptions over the past few years. He was tied for the NFL lead with pick sixes in 2022. So look, book him in for an end zone trip this week, baby.
You know, Colton, you bring up the change in cornerbacks maybe being the reason for switching to zone. And I almost wonder if it's the injuries that Branch and Kirby are dealing with, right? They're both lower body injuries. And if you put them in zone, you're asking less of them from a movement perspective, right? You're not asking Kirby to sprint halfway across the field. You're not asking Branch to play Rover or even some of these, you know, man-to-man responsibilities where you're jostling with a tight end. And so I don't know for sure. And I don't know if anybody's going to reveal why they're doing it, but you know, I speculate, or I'm trying to make an educated guess here that maybe those injuries are playing into it, maybe even more than the other stuff. Cause I think you're fairly comfortable with Amik and Rocky Sin playing physical man coverage. So I don't know, just a thought.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, Kirby does not look 100%. Obviously, he's not 100%. And, you know, some of us talked to him in the locker room after that game, and he seems fully intent on powering through, for better or for worse. They've got the bye week coming up. I think maybe if you had Branch available, you could think about sitting him for this one and just to get him right, like they've done with Decker. But that doesn't seem to be the case now with Branch's situation. So probably another reason why that's unfortunate timing on his end. But yeah, I could totally see that, because he's left two of the last three games and was able to come back. But if he's playing at, you know, 60%, 70%, whatever the actual number is, you know, it's showing on the field at times, and he's trying to gut it through. And if you can help him in some ways by playing more zone, I certainly think that would be a wise decision.
I went into that game. Go ahead, Will.
No, I was just going to say, Kirby is a lunatic, and I say this with all respect in the world. When he limped off the field and into the medical tent on Sunday night, I was sure that that was the last we had seen of him in that game, and he came out 10 minutes later and laid an absolute lick.
An absolute lick
on his very first snap back on the field on Isaiah Pacheco, and he came from like 20 yards to make that play. When he says he's all gas, no brakes, he means it, dude. Like, he lives it. He plays it.
That ejection, whatever he got in that knee, made it feel pretty damn good.
Yeah. I mean, me some of that.
You know, I went into that
game.
He
shot Red Bull into his knee.
I went into that game kind of excited to see Thomas Harper, as weird as that sounds. Just somebody was going to step in, and I asked a few different coaches about him, you know, the month leading up to that. And, you know, they said enough where I was like, okay, I'm intrigued. I mentioned it in the post game. I'm sorry, the pregame interview I did with Dan Miller on the broadcast, and I just said, like, look, I'm curious about this guy. I thought maybe he was going to start at nickel, and you know, they ended up going with Millett there, and they barely played any nickel, which wasn't surprising. But Harper stepped in and gave him 10 really good snaps, and obviously the huge pass breakup on fourth down. So I'm going to say that excitement carries over this week. I'm excited to see what they have in this kid. Played 15 games last year, started 5. And we're really pissing JJ off by talking about these PFF grades, but good, some good grades from PFF. It's not like I'm watching Raiders secondary play before this, so I'm just gonna take that as gospel apparently. But, you know, the safeties coach Jim O'Neill talked, you know, specifically about some of these plays that Harper's made in practice, the instincts, the range. Great. You know, if a guy's going to be down, let's see what the backup plan is, because, you know, you've assumed some contract control with Thomas Harper. So let's see if he can be a piece going forward.
Now, I do want to get into arguably our best segment of the entire show, and that is our dog and pony picks for Dog and Pony Show Brewing. The Buccaneers are on Monday night, and we got to get into our picks here and kind of just expectations for this game. The NFC is still, I think, pretty wide. The NFL in general is pretty wide open still. The Bucs are 6-1. Baker's only interception on the year came from a tipped pass. So he is, I think, front runner for MVP. He's balling with all the injuries. Bucky Irving, Mike Evans, Abuka just got hurt. You know, Chris Godwin's dealing with an injury, and he's still playing extremely good football. And we know every time the Lions play the Bucs, they're always really good games, as we've seen the last couple of times. But what are your guys' kind of expectations for this game? And then afterwards, kind of give your final score for the people here.
What a hilarious game with the Lions missing all their secondary and the Bucs potentially missing all their weapons. You know, Mike Evans might play in this one. We'll see. But I'm pretty sure Godwin, Egbuka, and Bucky, they're 1,500 yard scrimmage running back last year are out. And so, like, what is it? Movable force and, you know, whatever. You know what I'm getting at. Mm-hmm. It's it's pretty fascinating. And I looked at the standings today, and you know, the Bucks are 5-1. They're number one seed in the NFC if the playoffs start today. They have a plus 14 point differential. Like, they're just squeaking by in these games. And you know, it's impressive stuff. They're averaging 27 points with a fourth offensive coordinator in 4 years. Baker's balling, obviously, but I think this is a get right game for the Lions, and every game after a loss is a get right game for the Lions because that's just how they operate under Dan Campbell. Yeah. And so I don't think it's gonna be a particularly high scoring affair. You know, I think we saw with the red zone 1-7 against the Bucks last year. That defense is tough. But give me Detroit in this one, 23-17. 17 points with that secondary. Put it out there. MVP odds over for Baker Mayfield.
Go ahead, Virgie.
Hey, first of all, while we're on the Dog and Pony Show pick segment, I do want to remind everyone that while they are usually closed on Mondays, as I learned when I told fans to go there for the Ravens game last month, they will, in fact, be open this coming Monday for Lions Bucks. $5 beer specials with Little Lou's Hot Chicken Truck on site. Doors Ooh. Open at 5 p.m. They'll be open for the whole game. They got a big projection screen there. They got TVs on TVs. We've been, guys. We've seen it. Like, if you're looking for a great spot to watch a game with a bunch of great fans, that one would seem to fit the bill. So definitely go check them out Monday night. Jump in, J-Raj. What do you want to say?
I'm skipping the game. I'm just going straight to Dog and Pony. Here's yeah. a hot chicken. Let's go.
Yeah, catch us there. I think Graham Glasgow is going to learn on Monday night just how difficult Ooh. Frank Ragnow's life was for the past couple of years, having to take Vita Vea on one-on-one. And we'll see what kind of help comes his way. But Vita Vea is like the true definition of a game wrecker at nose, and not many of those, if any others, exist truly in the NFL. Just a guy who can ruin things from the deepest, muckiest part of the trenches. But that's certainly, to me, one of the biggest matchups to watch in this game. And I love the fact that we're seeing two first overall pick quarterbacks who were kicked to the curb by multiple teams in the case of Baker, but obviously one team in the case of Goff, kind of reconvene and recollide at a time when both of them are playing MVP caliber football. And Baker's MVP case is legit. Dude, so is Jared Goff's. Like, even in the game where the Lions haven't scored a bunch of points this year or the offense hasn't functioned at a high level, he is still out there playing almost perfect, flawless football. And he kind of did it again last Sunday, besides maybe not pausing to establish himself as a receiver on the fourth down play from the goal line. So I just like that we're seeing these two guys collide under those circumstances. I agree. I see a low-scoring game. I just don't see the Lions losing back-to-back games, and they haven't done it under Dan Campbell in almost like 3 full years. You have to go back to that early in the 2022 season. I think they bounce back, and I think that they get the ball in a concerted effort to David Montgomery early in this game. He's obviously been outtouched by a pretty wide margin by Gibbs to start this season. That's not really by design. It certainly was more of a result of the game script against the Chiefs, but he's coming off just 4 carries, which is a career low in his time with the Lions. Just 2 second-half touches, no second-half carries. You know, at this time last week, there was all this angst around J-Mo's lack of targets and touches in the offense. Well, he turns around for 6 catches, 66 yards, a touchdown, was a focal point of the game plan against the Chiefs. I kind of think we see something similar for Demo, even against a really good run defense. I think that makes a difference early. I think the Lions get a score late. I think Lions win this one 21-20.
Yeah, I think it's easy to look at the Bucs wins and say, okay, a 3-point win over the Falcons, 1-point win over the Texans, 2-point win over the Jets. That's not super impressive. 3-point win over the Seahawks. Like, their margin of victory is not that great. They beat up a 49ers team that's pretty injured last week, won that one by 11. But I almost think, like, if you get into a battle in the fourth quarter with this team, that's not where you want to be. I think it's impressive that they're able to win these games. At some point, that's who you are. That's your DNA as a football team. And I think Baker instills that confidence in these guys that they're going to come out on top when the clock goes to zero. So that, to me, kind of bothers me. I don't think you want to get into a close game with these guys, but you know, they have something to say about that too, right? A couple things I would say. They can generate pressure with 4 or with blitzing. It doesn't really matter. They're very consistent in both sides. We have a comment from James, I believe, and he mentioned that he wanted me to talk about how Baker shreds zone. So I will do that right now. Baker has the second highest EPA per dropback against zone coverage in the NFL this year. So maybe you play more man coverage in this game. Not trying to tell Kevin Shepard how to run his defense there, but yes, maybe a tip there. I do think the red zone issues in that game last year, that to me, if you hit like two more of those, like they're 1 of 7 in that game, you hit like one of those, you're probably in good shape. So they can't go 1 of 7. They got to capitalize when they get down there, obviously. And I think in that game last year, I think Ben Johnson told us he wanted to pass to kind of set up the run. That was sort of the game plan. And obviously it backfired because Vita Vea does damage in there and the pressure was kind of hurting from the interior. So obviously Frank is not out there. Frank had a pretty rough game in that game last year. Now you got to deal with Graham. So I do think this game's probably going to be won and lost in the trenches. I think those guys are going to have to be in tune with their communication, who's picking up who, because Todd Bowles, he runs some pretty elaborate stuff over there. So you got to kind of know where the blitzes are coming from. I think Jared does a really good job of that as the quarterback, as the sort of engine that's running this offense. So if they're on top of their calls there, I think they'll be okay. I think they have enough to win this game. I do think they're more talented. And I think the fact that Baker is going to be missing some of his top receivers helps you out, obviously. So I have the Lions winning this one. I'll go 24-20 Lions.
Justin?
No, I think I made a pick already, Jeff. I think we're to you now.
You were leaning in like you had something more to add.
Yeah,
you want a sleeper pick?
I saw it, but you know, it's an
individual pick. Sam LaPorta game. Boom.
Oh, I like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Listen, no,
I also want to put a little respect on the Bucs name. Like, it feels like they have evolved into like the lighter, maybe less star-studded version of the Lions, where they just find a way to put up wins every season. This goes back to when Bruce Arians was head coach and they brought in Tom Brady, and now it's a completely new iteration of the team under Bowles and with Baker, but they still just find a way to get the job done. And to me, they're kind of like the team personification of Mike Evans, who year after year after year puts up 1,000+ yards and maybe doesn't get all of the fanfare that he deserves relative to like some of the other players at his position over the past 10 years. But that is a first ballot Hall of Fame receiver. And this is the first place team in the NFC for a reason. Like, this is a very sound, disciplined, well-run football team. I think we're in for a whale of a matchup on Sunday or Monday night.
Let's send Woj down there to ask Baker Mayfield what it's like to play a team with so many stars.
Sure, he'd love that.
Shout out to Woj, man. He was taking it, bro.
He was taking it. From...
definitely taking it. To everyone who tuned in today, we appreciate you. Hit the like button on the way out. Pushes us out in the algorithm. Shout out to, of course, Dog and Pony Show Brewing. Shout out to Sleeper. The sponsors of the show. We'll see you guys next Wednesday.
Hey, what's your pick?
Jeff didn't even make a pick. He's just trying to.
Yeah, he's trying to get out of here. What are you doing, man?
You can't get out of here without a pick.
28-24 Lions. These picks have not been going my way this year, fellas. It's been a disaster. So 28-24 Lions. Hopefully, I'm not the bad luck charm. We'll catch you guys next Wednesday. As of right now,
Faden. Jeff, I have Fady.
Yeah, that's, you know, fade me. I think I went 0-for-5 on bet flips this week. Do not tail anything I bet, please. We'll be back next week. Until then, appreciate you all.